Hey everybody, we're really excited to have Brian Chaffin on the episode this week. We'll be back next week with a whole new season, and we're excited to get that started. But first, we wanted to give you some of our best of episodes, and we think that Brian is a great example of what we're trying to do. It's a very personal story to him, and we think it's one that can mean a lot to our listeners. So we hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you next week with a new episode.
I knew from the get-go that I loved her, and you know, she was the one for me. And you know, we both had a kind of a background in kind of serving the Lord and all these other things.
Welcome to Creating Community, a podcast designed to bring area leaders, business owners, and others together to better our community. I'm your co-host, Jake Starkey.
And I'm your other co-host, Dorian Strickland. We're the owners of 1820 Coffee House at 1820 Marketing in the heart of Alvin, Texas. Today, we're recording from the Alvin-Manville Area Chamber of Commerce once again. For more information about the chamber, visit alvinmanvillechamber.org.
If you're a first-time listener, we encourage you to subscribe to hear more. Creating Community with Dorian and Jake is available wherever you get your podcasts or at 1820marketing.com/podcast. We'd love for you to subscribe to stay up to date with us and the community. In this episode, we're sitting down with Brian Chaffin. Welcome to the show, Brian.
It's nice to be here.
We appreciate you coming in for sure.
Yeah. So our goal is to talk with people and learn from business leaders, politicians, and other interesting people. This episode is the latter. It's going to be a little different because we typically kind of break it into who you are and then your business. But this time it's going to be all about you and your family.
He called you an interesting person already.
I hope I'm interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, absolutely. I would say from our short discussion we've had before this, I think you are. So yeah. You definitely have a good story.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about growing up. You lived here growing up in Alvin.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Alvin. Loved the city. Alvin High School, graduating class of 2000, the whole bit, played baseball, was in the band, all kinds of good stuff in high school. Great experience. Alvinite for life, and except for a year-long stint in Uganda, but we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
That's fair.
Alvinite for life.
So I don't want to give up that so easily. I do love the city. I love making the city a better place, more interesting, if that's the case. So my wife is kind of a similar story. She showed up here in third grade when her family moved here from kind of Bear Creek area.
West side of Houston.
Yeah. And so she's been here ever since as well. And similar experience to me, great high school experience. She was a class of 03, Jacketeer, NHS, all that kind of stuff. So she was super active and super into school life and things. And so...
When did you guys get together?
Yeah, so actually we met, it was kind of scandalous, I guess you'd say, when it happened. I was a senior, she was a freshman. So it doesn't matter so much now, I guess. But back in the day, it was kind of a big deal. Put it this way, her older sister, Sarah, shout out to Sarah Raker here. She helped convince her mom to let us go on some double dates and supervised dates. So actually for the first almost year and a half, her little sister, Victoria, went on every date pretty much that we went on. It was totally worth it. I knew from the get-go that I loved her and she was the one for me. And
fantastic.
And we both had a kind of a background in kind of serving the Lord and all these other things.
That's fine.
We actually met at, I don't know if y'all remember, the Journey to the Rock
Ministries. Oh, yeah.
It was like this little Christian kind of club thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that was exactly where we met. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
My wife grew up, her sister is 7 years older, and she was Victoria. She had to go on the dates with so that way she would behave.
I totally get it.
Very cool.
I did not meet my wife until later in life, and we have a bigger gap than you do. So now when she says, what were you doing and what was she doing? People ask what she was doing when I was a senior. I would rather not say. Had I met her then, I would be a creepy old man right now.
There you go. That's funny. But it's cool that y'all knew each other from school and all the way up. So where did you go to college? Because I know you're a teacher.
So I started out here at ACC, got my associate's. Kind of a dolphin for life, and then I spent a semester at Stephen F. Austin, actually followed one of my best buddies up there, Robbie McGee, and also Joe Dean was up there as well, so we had fun. They actually ended up graduating from there. I went for a semester, missed Laura so bad. I was coming home every weekend. I couldn't do that anymore, so I ended up coming to University of Houston, main campus.
Yeah.
So go Cougs. Doing really good in basketball this year, by the way.
They are. Yeah, so made the tournament, right?
Yeah, a little side note. I taught Tremont Mark.
Oh,
nice. They're a superstar freshman.
Very cool.
He was in my history class in eighth grade. In
Dixon. That's very cool.
Nice.
So anyway, a great kid. But yeah, I went to University of Houston, graduated with a bachelor's in business in marketing. And so I was an accountant for, you know, it was about 8 years, kind of full-charge bookkeeper here in town for a local company. And then I kind of got the itch to, you know, switch careers, and I've been teaching since about 2014,
And you said you're down in Dickinson?
In Dickinson,
What made you choose Dickinson?
Well, at the time, that's where my wife was teaching as well. She was at McAdams Junior High, which is where I'm at right now. And there was, there happened to be, you know, in God in his providence, he sort of directs things, I think. And there was an opening in a history position, which I loved history. History was actually my minor in college.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I was really interested in it. Plus, I wanted to get my foot in the door somewhere, and I thought this would be a great place. And that's where I'm at currently. You know, I've kind of put down roots a little bit there in Dickinson. And so some really good people over there.
Nice.
Yeah. So let's back up, because you said you got a degree in business and in marketing, and then you did accounting.
Right. Yeah. You know, I have several people I went to school with that did the exact same thing. It's weird.
Accounting seems like a horrible job. I got lots of people to do it because I can't.
You know, I'm not going to disagree with that.
Shout out to the CPAs.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I didn't do a lot of tax things. I was more like managerial type stuff. And so I did some, like, some minor forecasting and some tax things and stuff. But, like, it was more kind of payroll, AP, AR type stuff and kind of day-to-day operations. But, yeah, I mean, for what it was a great opportunity for me. I'm forever grateful to, you know, Rick Pallage, RDL Energy Services. That's who I work for.
And then, so the transition to teaching, was that because, and we'll get to Uganda, but was it kind of, did they intersect, did they overlap, or was it just?
They started to, yeah. So there was really throughout kind of my stint at RDL, which lasted about, you know, through kind of all the way through 2013, kind of first month or so of 2014, me and Laura had really been considering, you know, growing family, because we didn't have any children for the first, you know, many years of our marriage. And we started kind of exploring why. And so we got into fertility doctors and the whole bit. And so we started kind of going down that road a little bit. So we had a choice. Like, God really kind of put us at a crossroads a little bit. And it was more of what we felt led to do. And I think in the end, sort of adoption was on the table, IVF, those types of treatments were on the table as well.
Sure.
And we used to go on walks all the time. We just loved walk. That's how we kind of aired things out and, you know, really talked to God together and stuff like that. And so, it was on one of those walks. We just kind of one day confirmed with each other almost in our spirits, like adoption, you know, adoption is our path that we want to take. We feel God leading us to. And so we did look at sort of my job at that point as well, and kind of, because I had already been studying for alternative certification kind of for a few months prior to this. And we thought it was time. And so God confirmed it. It was actually the day she got off for a Christmas break that year in 2013. We got a text that night from her principal saying that, hey, we had this opening. Would you be interested in it? I was like, yeah.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then February is when I started. So I kind of had that little half year when I got introduced to teaching, but.
Nice.
Wow. So that's a pretty quick turnaround from the time you got offered to the time you started.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was kind of boom, boom, boom. And we kind of, I think, had a lot of confirmation in that, just even in deciding the adoption, because we had started the adoption pre-approval process in September 2013. So that's when kind of our adoption journey truly began officially. Yeah. And then sort of career change in the middle of it and all these other things. Yeah. It was a hectic time in our life, but it was a good time.
And so you mentioned you've talked a little bit about your faith. So let's talk about that. Did you grow up going to church? When did your faith grab a hold of you?
Well, I did grow up in church for sure. My wife jokes all the time that I was born in the Methodist church, like on the pews or something. Which is not literally true, but it's kind of figuratively true, I guess. But I grew up in the Methodist church here in town from a really early age. Remember all the children's ministry things and just going to Sunday service, Sunday school, all those typical church memories. But it wasn't really until, honestly, my junior year of high school. I remember it pretty vividly. I was at a breakthrough kind of spring retreat with our youth group. And I remember Scott Crenshaw was the speaker, and Chris Tomlin, of all people, was the worship leader.
Wow.
Back before Chris Tomlin was big, I guess. But yeah, he actually taught me and Robbie how to play a song. A little side note there. But
wow.
But anyway,
okay, that's pretty cool.
I bet it was pretty cool.
You just brushed right over that. That's exactly. Kind of cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it was one of the nights there at the Breakthrough Camp, and I accepted Christ as my Savior, and I felt a noticeable difference. You know, some people say it's subtle and all these things. I felt a very vivid, stark difference in how I walked forward.
Yeah.
Cause I don't have a testimony like some people do. You know, I was selling drugs or I was a gang member or anything like that. And then I became a Christian. Like that wasn't my story. I was a kid who grew up in church, but didn't necessarily ever get it, you know?
Sure.
And then this one night God just spoke to me and said, you know, here I am, here's what I'm offering you. And I guess at some point we are ready in our spirit to receive it, I guess, because it is a gift of grace. I just wasn't ready to receive it before, even though I was being told about it a lot, right. I guess. And so, so I've been a Christian ever since, and there's ebbs and flows and ups and downs, but that's perfectly normal, I think. And but I think my Christian faith helped not just guide me in certain ways, but also comfort me in seasons of heartache. For sure.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of young people that are just like you. Cause I'm one of those that I went to church all the time as a kid, but I didn't really get it. Mm-hmm. Right. I never went to vacation Bible school or anything like that, but I think there's a lot of people that do. And that's when they have that moment that you're describing. And so, you know, what are your thoughts as far as your kids going to VBS and those kind of things or revivals or.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny you kind of bring up the kid aspect of it, because Elijah, our oldest son, he's 13 now. He vividly remembers before we even went to Uganda initially to meet him, there was a tree, it was a mango tree, I believe, at Amani Baby Cottage in Jinja, Uganda, that he remembers sitting under, praying, distinctly like praying to God for parents and family and all these things. So I think kids certainly have the ability to have an understanding of God's power and his, but just his presence too, his love and all these things. So, you know, Elijah has always been sensitive to spiritual things and whatnot. As far as our other two, we take them to church regularly and they go, they're part of the kids program and they love it. You know, Jonah, our little one, he runs out all the time and shows us what he colored and, you know, and what he learned that day. And so, and then David, he has a sweet spirit too. So it's, you know, we read the Bible every night together. I mean, that's part of our nighttime routine. And they eat it up, you know, because I mean, I know for a fact, you know, culture at large is not necessarily feeding kids scriptural truth. And so that if they're going to get it, it's probably in their home. And so me and my wife have been really dedicated to that, like making sure, even if it's a little kid's story Bible, like they're getting a truth from God's word,
right,
in the way that they can get, you know? So
yeah,
we love giving them God.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so we kind of buried the lead here, which is that you've been to Uganda and that's where the adoption journey kind of led you. But we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before that, let's hear a little bit from our sponsors.
Hey everyone, it's your friendly neighborhood realtor, Parker White with New Villa Realty. It's not a secret the real estate market is red hot right now. Whether you have a dream of becoming a homeowner, your family's growing and you need more room, or if you're an empty nester, I got you covered. New Villa Realty specializes in helping our clients achieve their real estate goals through a stress-free process and open communication 24/7. You will never be left in the dark, and I will be there with you for any questions you may have. Connect with me today so we can sit down and get you where you want to be. My phone number is 281-678-1811, or email me at parker@nuvillarealty, NUVILLA.com. I would love to meet you.
I'm Jamie Scafidi, President and CEO of the Alvin Manville Area Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce exists to provide support to businesses and organizations in the Alvin and Manville area. With various networking and marketing opportunities every month, the Chamber can help you grow your business. Learn more at alvinmanvillechamber.org.
Hey, we want to take a quick moment and tell you a little bit about 1820 Marketing, the producers of this podcast. We believe that when businesses have quality marketing, it gives business owners the freedom to focus on what they do best. We design websites, produce videos, and create marketing materials that help clients grow their business. Find out more at 1820marketing.com. It's something different. And now back to the show.
So, 2014, you transitioned from one job to another. You're in the process of adopting, trying to decide, I'm assuming, where to adopt, right? Because there's multiple options in this world, in Texas, in America. What led you to Uganda?
Yeah, that's not a country that you hear a lot that people are adopting from, I don't think.
Yeah, especially at the time. To kind of back it up a little bit, so 2013, by 2014, all that had kind of been decided. So 2013 is when we sent in our pre-approval packet to our agency here in America, and they were sort of exclusive to working with Amani Baby Cottage in Uganda. And so we knew that we were going to be adopting from Uganda, even this particular baby cottage. But even before that, we did pursue domestic adoption. That wasn't something that we just kind of overlooked. We went to an adoption counselor, I guess you'd say, here in the Houston area, and she kind of guided us through what domestic adoption looks like versus foreign adoption. And so that's another thing we prayed about. And then on another walk, so we love our walks, right? And then and so I just kind of said one night, I really feel like we need to adopt internationally. Like that's really big on my heart. And so of course Laura's like, she's celebrating, she loves it. And then it was in that season that I believe it was her mom, Laura's mom, that actually had been in contact. So it's kind of some backstory here to get us to Uganda. Okay, so you have to understand this. Laura's parents had gone to church with another family in Houston, okay, when they lived in Bear Creek. And so that family or that couple actually was the aunt of the woman who started Amani Baby Cottage.
Gotcha.
Oh, so there was a family connection that went way back, and they were still in contact with each other. And so that connection sort of started. It's funny how God works, because he had even placed us on their hearts to pray for us in adoption without even knowing we had already decided we're going to try to adopt internationally. And so they got in contact. And then, so we got introduced to Amani Baby Cottage through this sort of mutual family connection. And the rest is sort of history, I guess you would say. We got sent the information from New Horizons, which is the agency here in America. And so basically we ran with that. There's a pre-approval process. There's an interview. There's all that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure.
But Uganda became a natural choice for us because, number one, we had, a connection already. But then also Laura, from a very early age, had actually wanted to always be an African missionary.
Okay.
And also to adopt. And so she had this sort of childhood kind of desire to go do these things in Africa. And here was this opportunity almost being just kind of laid out before us. And,
right.
And so it was, when God does things, sometimes they're too good to be true, honestly.
Yes.
We're just like, how did you line that up, God? And only he can, I think, in the small little details like that. And so we sent in our pre-approval, and by July 2014, we were headed for Uganda for the first time to meet Elijah. We knew we weren't going to be able to stay because we didn't believe that we were going to get a court date in time for us to come back to school and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We were both teachers. Laura had actually at that point accepted a children's ministry director role at the Methodist Church.
So
she was actually kind of splintering off from teaching for about a year or so. In order to facilitate us being able to do the adoption. Yeah, so, the way it all worked out, even that, the court date, what they told you is that it would be a year. Everyone told us this. It's going to be at least a year before you get a court date. So we're like, we can't wait a year to go meet Elijah. We need to meet him this summer while we have the opportunity. And so we went for 3 weeks initially in Uganda, and then we got back. Literally, I think it was like 2 weeks later, we got a call from our agency. You have a court date.
Really?
Yeah. And we're like, I thought you said this doesn't happen. And so another miracle of God right there. So like literally the beginning of August, we went back to Uganda and prepared for a court date. And luckily it worked out that way, because we had to go to court three times Which is, you know, not uncommon, but it's definitely frustrating in the moment because you just want everything to work out. You know, we have that American sense of, you know,
I want it and I want it now.
I want it now, once and done type of thing. And so it didn't work out that way, but I think it ended up for the better because the way the judge was reading the materials, when we got to present it to our embassy, everything was just in a row.
In place.
It was in place the way they wanted to see it. And it wouldn't, I don't think, necessarily have been that way if he hadn't sort of dismissed us and called us back. Sure. It was actually a Ugandan war crimes judge.
Wow.
that saw our case. And so that was in the height of a lot of the things that were going on in Nigeria and all that area. I mean, there was a lot of upheaval in that area at that time. And so we actually were seeing the judge that had seen all these sort of war criminals we saw on TV and all these things. And so, and he's handling our adoption case. You know, it's just this tender thing next to this man. He's dealing with literally terrorists and things.
Yeah.
And so, that was sort of another piece of the puzzle that was just like, you know, God, you're amazing.
Yeah. Let me ask you. So you went because you didn't want to wait a year to meet Elijah.
Right.
So you went knowing that you were going to meet, hopefully, the child you were going to be able to take home at some point, mm-hmm. knowing that you were going to go home.
Yes.
What's going through your mind at that point? Obviously, 2 weeks later, it all comes to fruition.
Right.
But what's going on through your mind that 2 weeks? My wife and I tried going through an adoption process here in the U.S., mm-hmm. and we struggled with a lot of that back and forth. So what's going through your mind during that 2 weeks that, hey, we've met the baby we're going to take, mm-hmm. but we can't get him now?
That's a great question because in the end, you're just trying to, in the moment, soak up as much of the affection
who he is
and the country where he's literally born in and all these different things. You're trying to soak in as much of that, knowing, like you said, that you're going to be leaving in a few weeks. And that was tough because we didn't have, obviously, at that point, any knowledge that we were going to be coming back so soon. And so when we were there, you know, it was just fun. Like getting introduced to him. I mean, obviously we had to have some amount of order and I wouldn't say discipline at that point, but I would just say fun. We just wanted him to remember us as mom and dad are awesome.
And they're coming back.
And they're coming back.
Yeah.
And so when we left, we were obviously, you know, shaken up pretty bad. And then when we got to come back, it was like, you know, nothing had ever, you know, we had just kind of
that time hadn't gone by.
Yeah, just gone by so fast, and so everything I think in that first round really did work out well. You know, Elijah, of course, he was older; he was 6 at the time, and so he had ingrained in him a lot of, let's just say, behaviors that were hard to transition. He's an amazing young man now; you wouldn't know that now, but I mean, he was also transitioning. I mean, we were brand new parents. We didn't have biological children. And so we were first time parents to a 6-year-old.
Skip some steps, some would say.
Exactly. So we were kind of walking in that, transitioning in that, but he was also transitioning in the idea and the reality that he now had a mom and dad. And so he was pushing some boundaries. And then, you know, I had to come back to school because I only had so many weeks off that I could take because I'd already started the school year and things like that. And so, I kind of a sad story. I had to fly out on my birthday.
Oh, man.
I had to leave my wife and son in Uganda on my birthday, which is really sad. But It seems to have worked out, yeah. So, and then Laura ended up staying the next, about 8 weeks till the middle of November by herself. And you know, Lord really blessed her. The guest house we were staying in, there were like 2 or 3 other families that were also adopting. And so there were some really godly women older than her that were really guiding her and helping her and encouraging her and just helping her through that process as well. And so, that whole first round was, looking back on it now, was more short and to the point. You know, when you look at, you know, 12 weeks versus a year or 18 months, like there's no comparison. But it was like a storm almost, just like blew through real quick.
Wow.
As opposed to just kind of a sitting rain or something. You know, it was there was a lot to be said for how God moved that first round of adoption.
Gotcha.
Because he just kind of, he brought it, he got us through it, and he got us home.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. But
yeah, and so you went back again. Mm-hmm. And this time you went and were in the process of adopting 2.
Right.
So to me, it seems like, I wonder, like you said, what would have happened if that first time was a total nightmare. You might not have wanted to go through the process again.
Exactly.
And so, but it went smooth as could be. Mm-hmm. You went back for round two, as I'll call it. you lived there for 12 months, 18 months. You're mm-hmm. adopting two more kids. And then you leave mm-hmm. With Elijah.
Correct.
And then your wife has an accident. Mm-hmm. What was it like getting that call? Mm.
Well, it's emotional for sure. You know, we were at that point, we had the knowledge that within the week, like literally, so it happened on a Friday. We both got home from school. So me and Elijah both, I got home from work. He got home from school. It was just kind of your normal Friday evening. Went to bed. We knew the semester was coming to a close, and you know, we knew that probably next week we were going to see mom and brothers, and we were hopeful for that. And you know, we went to sleep. I remember we actually went to bed pretty early that night, even though it was a Friday. We were just exhausted, and so we were sleeping hard. And come to find out later, people in Uganda had been trying to call me since about 1 or 2 in the morning, trying to reach me about what had happened. And of course, I'm asleep. I'm a pretty hard sleeper when I finally go to sleep. Yeah, so my body started waking up naturally around 5:30 or 6, and that's when Emily Somm, who's the niece of the orphanage founder, Deneen. So Emily calls me at about, I think it was about 5:30 in the morning, Saturday morning, and I was like, she's not calling me for a good reason.
No.
I immediately knew, just innately, there's no reason she would need to be calling me right now. And so I just kind of, what I do, some people sort of bleed into emotions. I get real stoic, to be honest with you. I try to hold it together, and I try to compose myself so that I can react in a way that's functional, you know?
Yeah.
And so, because I knew that what was about to be told to me is not going to be functional. And so she's of course crying. I'm going to start crying now, but she's crying through the whole thing. She tells me, you know, Laura's been in a BOTA accident. So a BOTA is a motorcycle taxi, basically. It's gotcha. It's how you get around in Uganda. You know, very few people actually have their own automobile. So it's a cheap form of transport.
Right.
But so she's been in a BOTA accident. Jonah was with her. Jonah's okay. So we knew Jonah was, he had some scrapes and stuff on his head. But I think, in God's providence, I think he landed on Laura when they were throwing off the BOTA. And so, so Jonah's okay. He's getting medical attention, but Laura is unconscious. She's in a coma. She's been transported to Kampala, which is their capital city, to what was, I mean, their most prestigious hospital, you know, so they had taken her by ambulance from Jinja to Kampala, which in and of itself is kind of a treacherous thing because it's, for one, it's like, by our road standards, it'd probably be like going from here to, you know, Bush Intercontinental.
Oh, wow.
But it's like taking...
It's not freeways.
Yeah, but it's like taking 3.5 hours to get there.
Wow, yeah.
You know, and that's on a good day. And so they're in an ambulance. And so we had some good friends from Jinja, Jared and Stephanie Shepman. They actually were directors of another ministry there in Jinja. And I think it was either Jared, I forgot which one. But one of them rode with Laura in the ambulance, and one followed to go to the hospital, and they did MRIs and, you know, CT scans and all these other things. And it was hard because the news, because there wasn't a lot of news at that point when she called me, just that, you know, Laura's been in an accident. She's unconscious. We'll have to fill you in once we get the info. Of course, I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. Trying to keep myself together. I say bye. She says, you probably need to call Serge. You know, Serge was, Deneen, who was the founder of Amani, that's her husband. So Serge is a bit like he's a businessman there in Uganda. He's from the UK. He's a really awesome guy, by the way. But I call Serge, and he's kind of like me in a way. He just kind of gets to the point.
Right.
He tells me what he knows, but real compassionate.
But that's what you want.
That's what I wanted in the moment. You're right. Yeah. And so he told me what he knew, which is a bit more hopeful. He did mention that she was at Nakasero Hospital, which was, you know, by all accounts, the best hospital she could end up at to have some good quality care. And so he told me that, and he told me, you know, she appears to be stable, all these other things. So after I talked to him, I kind of regained my composure again, and then I call her mom. I call Laura's mom,
Oh, man.
And by this point, it's probably like 7 in the morning, something like that. I just kind of laid it out. And you know, Terry's a woman of great faith. And so Laura definitely has that lineage of faith in her family, too. And so I told Terry, and from the very beginning, we both sort of spoke hope and faith and miracle over the situation, because we knew that there's nothing that we could do to empower what needed to be done. Only God could do it. And so so surprisingly, I mean, I know it sounds kind of maybe, like I said, stoic and maybe cold a little bit, but I never worried. I never doubted. That sounds maybe arrogant and faith.
No, that's your faith.
It was my faith. I was being kind of, I don't know, not tested. I don't think God causes those things. He allows those things, but he didn't cause the accident. You know what I mean? And so I just knew that whatever was going to happen, God was going to be the reason for it. And I was just going to be a witness to it, you know? And so I never asked the question, why?
Wow.
I didn't. And so I asked the question, what? Like, what are you going to do through this? Like, how are you going to use this? Never like, why did you do it? Or anything like that. It was really easy to. I was a week away from seeing my wife and two sons and all these things. I was like, why? What are you doing, God? But I never really did. And I think that was really critical, especially once I got there. And I do get a little emotional talking about it, sorry. But seeing her for the first time, just laying in their ICU, or what is the equivalent of their ICU. And she's, of course, unconscious. I mean, bruised all over her face and the whole bit. I mean, it was pretty ugly. But then, so God offers hope in lots of different ways. I'd been sort of singing this song, kind of an old song. It was Delirious. I don't know if you're a, '90s Christian kid. You know who Delirious is, probably. Yes. But, so they have this song called My Soul Sings. You know? And so I'd been singing that for a while. I don't know why. It just kind of was in my head. And God kind of showed me what it means for a soul to sing. Because my wife, who's unconscious, by the way, like no brain activity, you know, and so she's not aware of what she's doing. She's not, I would say, conscious of what it is she's singing, but she's praying. You know, she's, I mean, you can't really understand a lot of the words. A lot of the words that you could understand, though, were, I mean, it related back to, like, basically, God, you're good. You know, I praise you, like all these things. And like I said, she's not aware of this. It's just her spirit. It's her soul. It can't help but sing, you know, to God. And so I'm like, you know, this is a very telling moment, because we, as people who know what we're saying, I think have a really great responsibility to say the things that are actually like true and the things that are deep inside of us. Because here's my wife who's not aware of what she's saying, and yet she's praising God, you know, and it's like, that's amazing to me. And so from that moment forward, I did not doubt once that God was going to heal her brain, allow her to walk, allow her to speak, all those things. And then, of course, the rest is sort of documented history, because I kept a pretty decent log on Facebook every day. I posted and stuff. And so just the miracle after miracle and progress that God brought, even to get us on a plane to be back here by Christmas. So we got here Christmas Eve, by the way. Wow. Christmas Eve at like 8 o'clock at night or something.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. And so it was kind of a miracle just to do that. But I mean,
and was that with the boys?
That was with the boys too.
The whole
clan came back, because, you know, we were all waiting. I mean, that's sort of a separate issue. She didn't get to finish the visa paperwork, which means when I got there, I had to not only sort of tend to her and find housing and all these other things, I had to get the visa paperwork processed and completed so we could all come home. Yeah.
So where's Jonah during all this time when she's unconscious in the hospital and you're a week away, or however long it takes you to get there? Where is he at this time?
Yeah. So Jonah was actually staying with some other friends that we had there, Sam and Morgan Knobloch. They're a really godly couple that were also on mission there in Jinja. And so Jonah was staying with them, you know, because he absolutely loved, you know, spending time with Morgan and all them.
Yeah.
He just loved playing and stuff. But he was with them. And then David was actually at Imani. So he stayed at Imani. He was a little bit older. And so he was pretty well accustomed to just being there. And, you know, so all the aunties is what we call them. They took care of him.
Yeah.
Nice. And so, the boys were taken care of. And I didn't really even see them until several days after we had arrived in Uganda. Because we just kind of wanted, just for their own sense of things, we wanted to distance him a little bit from from seeing mom that way and stuff like that. And so, so they actually got brought to me in a rush one day to get our visa interview and all that kind of stuff, get it all done. Yeah, so.
Well, let's fast forward just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that Christmas Eve you came home. Mm-hmm. How are things going now? Like, where are we at now? I mean,
which is 3 years later, four.
Yeah, so we're sitting right at two. It's a little over two.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk about this for a very long time. You've got a lot to unwrap here. I really want to talk forever, but I know that listeners don't want to listen forever.
Absolutely, yeah.
But where are you now, 3 years later, 2.5 years later?
I would say we're in a really good spot. I think, for one, Laura progressed so fast through. She got admitted and accepted into Tier Memorial Hermann, which is sort of the premier rehabilitative, I would say, program in the area for sure. Arguably the country. It's really specific to like brain trauma and injury and stuff like that. And so they do some miraculous things there. And so she progressed through their challenge program within a couple of months. And so within really even before the end of the school year, before the spring semester was over, she had been hired by Alvin Elementary, which is her old school before we left.
Wow.
To do like tutoring and some substituting and stuff like that. And so she was in a place, honestly, where she was just like classroom ready. And she's just been this horrible accident a few months before. And it's like, what a amazing testimony that is. And then she started her master's program just that next semester.
Wasn't enough of a challenge.
It wasn't challenging her enough. So exactly. So she has the spring semester and she has the summer to go. And then of course her principal certification test. But after that she'll be ready to be an AP or a principal or whatever the case may be.
And whatever God's calling her to be.
Exactly. Right? So she's doing really well. Our family is really tight knit. We're a crew. I mean, you see us coming for sure. So
Well, and I would see you sitting a couple rows over at church. Mm-hmm. And so it's really neat to see. And I think for me, the takeaway is the attitude that you had about the situation, because I think as a person of faith, a lot of times something bad happens and the first thing we want to do is get angry at God. And I think you had the response that we should have. And I know I don't necessarily have that, but the idea of, okay, whatever's next, it's not caused by God, but he's there and he's a part of it. And so your job is to walk alongside him through this process for whatever it may be, good, bad, or indifferent, because he's there with you. Goofy is the stupid footprints in the sand thing that you always saw as a kid growing up. But to me, that's the takeaway of this conversation is that when something bad happens, when things mount up, when you have these weird things of I'm adopting, my wife is a week away from coming home with
our two new sons. I've got so much on my plate.
Yeah. Things are going wrong. You use it as an opportunity to walk alongside God instead of pushing him away. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that I needed to hear today.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that hopefully our listeners can walk away with as well.
For sure.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, for sure. You know, my wife and I have talked, we watch shows sometimes where they lose one of their kids to an accident or a murder or whatever the case is, and they say, I'll never forgive that guy. Mm. And it sounds like there was no blame from you on anybody. I mean, it could have been the driver's fault. It could have been whatever the case may be.
Right.
But you didn't go there at all. Mm-hmm. And the number of people that really kind of carry that with them forever, it's really refreshing to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
It's my pleasure. It.
Thank you to our listeners, and thank you to the Alvin Manville Area Chamber of Commerce for letting us come and record. For show notes and for more about us and what's going on at 1820 Marketing and 1820 Coffee House, visit us at 1820marketing.com/podcast or on Facebook at 1820 Marketing or 1820 Coffee House. We stay busy. We hope you'll join us for our adventures. Thank you.